Okay, we're going to move on, if you're ready, to the Milton model. Now, I've explained a couple of times, I didn't get to meet Milton. And I'm going to ask Tim if he has any old videos that possibly I could bring in next time, or that we could utilize, so that you might have an experience of just who is this older gentleman named Milton Erickson, who was the world's finest hypnotherapist, medical hypnotherapist, because he had a medical degree, that people would go and be excited. And Nick told me the other night when he stopped by that he started in NLP the same time Tim and I did, and he attempted to go see Milton, but there was a one-year waiting list.
Oh, my God.
1 year waiting list. And he said, so I never got to him before he died, because I was on the waiting list. So, but the people that studied with Milton Erickson have all kinds of stories to tell about him. And he was, if you see pictures of him, a wonderful old gentleman that was in a wheelchair because he had polio when he was young. He often, in his wheelchair, was in purple pajamas because he was also colorblind, and the only color he could see was purple. And the pajamas were comfortable as he sat in his wheelchair. His story is just absolutely fascinating about how he healed himself from polio when he was told he was going to die the next day. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, what we need to know about him is Bandler and Grinder went to him, and on the recommendation of Gregory Bateson, who is the man that came up with logical levels and the fish, the dolphin story. He's the man who went and watched how they were training the dolphins and gave us the idea of encouragement. Gregory Bateson was an anthropologist who was married to Margaret Mead, another anthropologist. And he lived in Santa Cruz and knew of Milton Erickson and suggested to Bandler and Grinder that they go spend some time with this incredible man. And they did. And their interest was in modeling, especially his language patterns. And it's no accident that he got the results that he got, because he would interview a client and then he would spend a week writing a story for that client. And my understanding is he would start and he might have a 40-page story for this client that would deal with his issues and his interests. And then he would synthesize that 40 pages down to 20 pages. And then he would synthesize that down to 10, until he ended up with maybe a 3-page story that was loaded with all kinds of language patterns that presupposed this person would change. And they did, oftentimes. And somebody once said to him, is there anybody that you haven't been able to hypnotize? Because when people listened to him, he had, and I can't mimic it, but he had a gravelly voice, you know, because of the polio. He didn't speak really clearly. And when they asked Milton, is there anyone you've not been able to hypnotize? He said, there was one person that I have not yet figured out what strategy I need to use. So he didn't ever give up. He didn't ever give up. But his language patterns became known as the Milton model. And what Bandler and Grinder noticed is they modeled Virginia Satir. She was very specific. She knew exactly, as well as Fritz Perls, how to use her language to get specific results from people. So the meta model came from those two. The Milton model came from Milton being artfully vague. So they labeled this the Milton model, and it is the exact opposite in terms of language patterns of what we studied yesterday with the Milton model, or with the metamop. So if you look at page 66 in your notes, it says the Milton model or inverse metamodel. So your challenge is, when do I use which language? So on page 66, you notice they talk about how you can leave things out. You can say, I wonder, or I'm curious, but you're not saying what you're wondering or what you're curious about. And that leaves the person to figure it out on their own. What are you curious about? What do you wonder about? And with pronouns, this can easily be learned. You're not saying for whom. You're not saying you can easily learn this, because the whole intent of the Milton model is to reduce resistance on somebody else's part. It's the language of sales. And those of you who have been through any kind of sales training, as we start talking about this, will recognize they often teach you these kinds of processes when you are in a sales training. Don't be too specific. And of course, if you're training to be a politician, you surely know how to use all of these. You're not saying exactly what you will do or how you will do it or who it will work for. So the pronouns and the nouns are totally unspecified. You use a lot of nominalizations when you're using the Milton model. Things like learning. And you're not talking about what a person is learning, but you're talking about the many learnings you have. And you notice if I use it that way, the learnings you have, it's like learnings are a thing. It's not you'll be learning about the inverse meta model, which would be very specific. That's not a nominalization. But if I say your learnings, it's like, well, what learnings are those? You don't know what the learnings are because it's not specific at all. Or your unconscious mind. And of course, in hypnosis, that was used a lot. What is your unconscious mind? Can anybody make a picture of your unconscious mind? What is it? What's your guess? If you start talking about an unconscious mind or an unconscious, what are we talking about? The older parts of the brain.
The essence.
And what else? Huh?
The essence of you.
The essence of you? Well, yeah, right. Now, that's a good nominalization. Yeah. Vivian?
For me, it's the parts you rarely use.
Okay, the parts you rarely use. Mm-hmm. Yeah? David?
People actually have different definitions for it.
That's right.
And the thing is, some people use the unconscious mind to say this. Or like the emotional consciousness, and then some people use that term to mean it's a point where you're not conscious, you're like, not conscious,
okay.
And it's right. Different than from universal consciousness or super consciousness. So they have different meanings.
They
use it different ways and different.
Right. And so, if you can use a word like unconscious that can be interpreted in about 10 different ways, then you know that's a nominalization. And when you say it, you're allowing the person to come up with their own definition. Now, I like to think of the unconscious as anything I'm not paying attention to at the moment, that I'm not being present to. I've got thousands of bits of information stored somewhere inside of me. And if I'm not paying attention to it, then I'm not aware of it at that moment. So I consider that unconscious. Right. Right. So just realize that anytime you use a word that can be defined in lots of different ways, you are really using a Milton model pattern because you're not being specific. And again, people won't argue with you because they're making up their own meaning out of it. And notice under unspecified verbs, we don't use sensory words when we are using verbs. So it you wouldn't say what you're looking at, what you're listening to, what you're feeling, but it's what that you could remember something, you could discover something, you could have awareness of it. So there's no sensory system attached to it for you to be mismatching on somebody's part.
If you like offer, like, you might notice the things that you're smelling, or you might start to see.
You can, but you risk the danger of mismatching if somebody's not paying attention to things they're seeing, right? But you can say notice, aware, become conscious of, and that leaves it open, just totally open. Well, and Sonny brought up the universal quantifiers the other day when he was looking at this page that says, with each breath you can relax more deeply. So remember, universal quantifiers are when we're lumping a whole bunch of things. So we're saying with each breath, you'll notice this. And every time you sit down in this chair, and Gary, you may use all of this because I know you use hypnotherapy in your practice. Every time you sit in this chair, you will notice yourself being more relaxed. And each day that you come in through the door here in this training room, your curiosity will be piqued about what learnings might be available to you at that moment in time. So that's using Milton language. Y'all hear that? And modal operators, you might say, you can't. You won't be able to think about this. And you've all noticed what happens when you say, don't think of the color blue right now. Don't think of purple bunnies doing somersaults in the front of the room. Don't actually gets people to have to make some kind of representation that they wipe out. Yes?
Is that form of
hypnosis? Of course. Were you fully present when you were being anchored to what was outside of you, or were you really inside your own body? Yeah, when you anchor somebody, you kind of put them into a trance. And let's talk about that. How many of you are afraid of hypnosis? Some people are. Yeah, and it might be because you've seen a stage hypnotist who makes people think they're a chicken and they cluck in front of people, or they stand on their heads or do crazy things. But hypnosis is anytime you're eliciting a trance for somebody. How many times in the last 2 days have you been in what you would consider a trance? In this room, as well as maybe driving, coming and going, sitting in front of TV. Oh, TV is the best hypnotic technique you can use. It puts you totally into trance.
Driving, I call it automatic pilot.
Yeah, driving a car.
Nice.
Uh-huh, right. So hypnosis is not anything to be afraid of because we do it all the time. And one thing Milton used to say is the biggest issue we have is getting people out of trance. Not into trance, because we elicit a trance so often. In here, I might say something that reminds you of something from another time, and you start thinking about something else. I just put you into trance. You go away. I didn't do it intentionally, but it happens in the world all the time. Okay? Let's see. Oh, I like modal operators, which it would say, you can't get relaxed now. You can't think of a childhood memory. But you can just sit there and relax. And lost performative would be where you were saying, it's best that you relax now. It's right that you allow your body to relax.
Our mobile
It can be. Yes, because if you don't want somebody to think of something, you tell them, don't think of da-da-da, and you'll get them to think about it. So if you know that automatically works, then you can use that pattern to do reverse psychology.
Somebody kind of checks out. Is that the way to do it?
Absolutely. If you're not present to what's right in front of you at that moment, that's a trance state. And you know, I watch you guys go in and out of that while you're here listening. I'll look out there and I'll notice somebody's gone. Well, it could be something I said, or it could be a connection they're making with something else, and there's nothing bad about it. We do it all the time. And really fine athletes, I think, go into trance, and they don't, oftentimes they're not even aware of what they're doing. Musicians do it. I mean, artists, you know, you'll get through and you don't even remember what you did because you went into, it's like a really focused state of flow inside the body. Claire?
I was going to say, so is that why people
Yes, yes, because, sure, and it's less scary. If you're in a state of flow, some people, again, are really frightened by the term hypnosis or trance because of what they've seen or heard about. I mean, who would want to cluck like a chicken in front of a group of people? Yeah. Yes. Car. Right. Right. That's trance. That's trance. Mm-hmm. That's a trance state, yes. When you've got so much going on, you confuse yourself or overwhelm yourself. And that's how stage hypnotists work. They give you so many instructions you can't follow it and put you into a state of confusion. At least that's what I've heard. I've never been a stage hypnotist, so I don't know. Yes, David. That's a good way of thinking about it. Yeah, when you are meditating, you do put yourself into a trance.
But it's all about the
positive.
You
can just be watching it without. You think that trance always in trance.
Mm. Well, Milton mentioned that he thought one of the biggest issues we have as a society is that we spend so much time in trance that we are less conscious than we need to be about our lives and what we're doing. And I know I've discovered accidents happen when I'm not fully present, when I'm in trance thinking about something else. So it can be dangerous in certain circumstances that you're not present to what you're doing. So our intent in learning about the Milton model is that you can recognize it and you know when to use it. So the when you use it is when you're helping somebody anchor a resource and you don't want to specify. If I said to you, now I want you to go back to a time in the past when you could see things clearly out your eyes and hear things really clearly that were being said, and you were in a state of confidence, and that wasn't what the person was attempting to access, I have just made it very difficult for them to go into a state. But instead, if I use the Milton model and say, I'm sure there is a time in the past when you've had access to this resource that you have identified you want here. And I don't know how quickly you will access that in your body. I'm using the Milton model to assist them And I'm being artfully vague. I'm not saying what the resource is, how quickly they will do it.
Yeah, she said that you can see clearly.
Oh, yes. I was very specific. So if I said, I want you to find that resource you call confidence when you're standing balanced on both of your feet and your heart is beating a certain way and you were entertaining other people, I get that specific. You know, the person's going to go, I don't have a time like that. But if I say, I'm sure you're aware of some time that you had access to this thing you call confidence. And as you step back into that, notice what you feel in your body. Versus that state of confidence where your heart is beating at a certain rate and you're seeing things, that's too specific. So do you hear the difference? I don't want to be specific about what they're seeing, hearing, or feeling, but I want to just use a nominalization like confidence. Confidence is a state of being, isn't made up of a lot of different things you would do. It's not a thing. And so I imply it's a thing, and they can go to confidence whenever they can experience it. That's right. Right. Instead of saying, notice that it's warm and soft and around your heart. If I specify that much, they're not going to be able to do it because that might not match their state. I'm mind reading that I know what their state would feel like inside their body. Okay. Now let's look at the linkages. This is important. The cause-effect, the way you link things together. How many of you have noticed that when you use the word and to put two things together, you're sitting there in your chairs right now, looking at this handout on the language patterns of influence, and you're feeling incredibly curious about what I'm going to say next. Now, there could have been no relationship whatsoever towards looking at this and the fact that you're feeling curious. But when I use and as the connector, it puts those two things together. So and is a really powerful connector. And I don't know if anybody's mentioned it yet, but as you are pacing, Larry may have mentioned it, avoid using the word but. So if I said, I want to pace something you're doing, you're having an experience that's really powerful for you right now, but I wouldn't want you to think of a past experience that wasn't very powerful for you. What happens with the but? It negates what came before. But if I say, you're having this experience and you're really wondering how you can use that in that old memory, it connects the two together. So and is a powerful connector. And I always say to people, get the but out of your language. Unless you're using it as reverse psychology. And the way you would use the but as reverse psychology is to say to somebody, and this works for a lot of people, but I'll bet you would find ways that it won't work for you. If they're a polarity responder, then I've just made them think about the reverse. Anyway. And there are some language patterns that came from Milton. One has to do with time. How many times have you had somebody that's close to you say, while you're out, would you mind picking up the groceries for the party? Or since you're up, would you get me a beer out of the refrigerator? Does she? You're already doing it. So you notice that those time words, if you use them, the intent is that people will be less resistant. less resistant to what you're suggesting. Since it's time to go to bed, you might say to your kids, since it's time to go to bed, would you like to brush your teeth first or put your pajamas on first? Now, that's presupposing they're going to do both of those things and go to bed, since it's time to go to bed. So they don't say, no, it's not time to go to bed. No, I'm not going to do those things. It's we're talking about the order we're going to do this in. And this is, again, why this is the language of sales. So would you like to have all of your questions answered first, or would you like to actually try the product out first? What's presupposed is you're going to do both. Should we sign the contract now, or should we do it after dinner? Mm-hmm. Now, you've all heard these things. Would Friday at 2 or Saturday at 3 work better as an appointment? What's presupposed? We're going to have this appointment. We're just talking about the time. Your house or mine? One drink or two? Again, it's the language patterns of persuasion. And oftentimes, it allows things to just slide by easily. So what we're going to do, we have just enough time to play around with this a bit. Now that you've heard of some of the Milton patterns and how, instead of being specific about an action or a person or an activity, that you are artfully vague about it, you're going to have the opportunity to actually practice putting someone into a trance. And so this is the way we're going to do it. You'll have, you'll be getting feedback from the other person about how you're doing it. So I like to call this a pleasant scene visualization. So it's where you're going to take somebody to another place outside of this room that would be a pleasant place and take them on a journey. It might be going for a walk along the bay. It might be taking a hike up into the mountains. It might be skiing down a mountain. It could be anything that you think, ask the other person, where would you like to go to another, to Bali, and experience what might happen for you on the island of Bali, or up on a mountainside, or on a walk along the beach, or whatever. And your job as the coach here will be to tell a story to the other person that will help them either get more into being in that location or less into it. And notice what happens with the other person. How do you know they're getting more into it by the words that you're using? And how do you know that what you're saying is too specific and it's pulling them out of it? So this is where you get to play, Kira, with, well, if I talk about something that they are actually seeing, and as you're walking along, you notice the blue sky with just a few white clouds in it, and they go, my sky isn't blue, it's kind of gray. Versus, and you can look up in the sky and notice what you notice. That would be Milton. The blue sky with white clouds in it would be Metta, which is going to work the best for helping somebody go more into this experience. So you're going to have the opportunity to just play, and that's what this is. There's no right, there's no wrong. It's for you to notice. And I would suggest at some point you might say to the person, and can you think about something? Can you think about the feeling that you're having? use can you versus saying a person might notice. So make it that vague versus can you, so that you notice the difference. Because when people are doing NLP, I notice all the time they'll say, can you think of a time in the past when you had this experience? What is that implying? They had the experience, but what else?
They might not be able to.
So notice how that's different than you'll be able to think of a time when that resource was readily available for you.
But don't you?
Well, I want you to try it to notice. Okay. So that when you're the person that somebody is talking to, you notice when they say, can you, what that does inside of you. Because can you do that is really saying, you might fail at this. Mm-hmm. Just directing them.
You'll be able to imagine
what it was like for you when you actually had access to that. So again, some of you may have never tried this sort of thing before. When I first was introduced to NLP, I went, hypnosis, I've never done that with anybody. But this is your chance to try out language. Notice what happens when you just imply things versus when you're very specific about things. And use all of those words called nominalizations that you can't put in your pocket, so they can have their own experience, Lance.
Resource supporters maybe demonstrate like they did with the Milton model, maybe with the meta model.
Okay, please get comfortable in your chairs. I will demonstrate. And your job is just to notice. Okay, what happens when I use certain language patterns and I don't use others, okay? So get comfortable in your chairs. If you want, you can take your things off your lap. And I'd love to take you on a journey to where I live, to the mountains of Idaho, so I'm gonna specify where we're going. I'll take you on a walk in the woods. And many people find this easier if they close their eyes, so you're not distracted by what you're seeing. And if that's the case, go right ahead and do that. As you take a couple of deep breaths, inhaling fully and exhaling fully. As you begin to notice what your body feels like, as you attend to breathing in and breathing out, feeling your body becoming whatever it's becoming as you're sitting in this particular chair at this moment in time. And as you are there, breathing, noticing sensations, you can pay attention to the color of the carpet on the floor. I just used a very specific word. Notice what happened. Instead of saying, you can become aware of whatever you're aware of. And do you imagine that your body could float off to a place in the woods in Idaho? And as your body floats off to that place in the woods in Idaho, your awareness goes to whatever is around you. What is there in that environment for you? What is it you pay attention to? And do you hear a squirrel off in the distance? And you can't help but notice what it sounds like. You become conscious of the clothes on your body, what they feel like. The sensations. A curiosity comes up. Your imagination is fully available. You're there, wherever you are. Breathing. Noticing. And then a deer appears in front of you. A brown deer with a white bottom. Okay, now come back to the room. Do you see the difference? I'm going back and forth between them. What happens with the squirrel? I saw some of you go. That was too specific, wasn't it? And the brown deer with the white bottom, too specific. Mm-hmm. But when I say curiosity, awareness, you're just floating off whatever.
Uh-huh. Just kind of creating space that then they were using, inviting them to us to use our...
To go wherever you go. So, again, I want you to do just what I was doing, which is... switch back and forth and notice what happens with the person, and they're going to, after they've done that, give you feedback. Boy, that squirrel and that deer, they were too specific for me. Did it feel jarring? Yeah, no.
I can work with a squirrel.
You can work with
a squirrel. Intensified.
Okay.
But it was a deer.
Okay. The squirrel didn't work, but the deer?
Yeah, when you get it right, it makes the deer stronger.
I didn't want to go to the woods in Idaho.
Huh?
I didn't want to go to the woods in Idaho.
Right, see?
In
the first place, right. I specified where I was going to take you instead of to just a pleasant place in nature. Huh? Yeah, Claire.
I was going to say, does that make a difference? Because if you don't like deer or the mountains because there are ticks or something like that, that totally ruin
absolutely. That. If you're so specific, instead of saying, so if I wanted to create a scene, I would just say, find some place that you find desirable, that maybe is in nature, and let's take a journey there. Well, not while they're in trance. I mean, after you've played around with it, then you say, oh, where did you go? But you could ahead of time say, where is some place? So that you knew whether we were walking through a meadow with wildflowers or up on a mountaintop.
And that's a really good way to practice looking for sensory acuity. Right?
Absolutely.
That's how you can gauge, what I said didn't work.
Yeah, them. Because I just laughed at the looks on some of your faces when you're breathing deeply and everything, and all of a sudden it's like, what was that? The carpet, the color of the carpet?
Yeah.
On the floor? Yeah, uh-huh.
The point that you made just now, so during the induction, the scenarios to be used during the induction process is derived from getting to know the coachee or the client or the customer. So if the client is not comfortable with water, then don't use water-based scenarios for the induction process.
Oh, and yes, you don't take them to the ocean if they don't like water. That's true. That's true. And, you know, this is, I understand, this is the way Milton Erickson got so good at what he did. He experimented, and then he noticed, oh, that doesn't seem to work. And with his clients, he did information gathering about their interests so that in his metaphoric stories, he could weave their interests in. So what we're doing here is you're having a chance to just play with language and notice what happens when you do it so that you know the impact your words have on somebody else. And it's everybody isn't gonna be the same. Gary goes, oh, that actually drove me deeper. If I was working with Gary, I would notice that and go, okay, I can add some specificity with him. Whereas I noticed Lance back there went, like, good Lord, what are you doing, woman? Like I just jerked a knot in his tail or something when I got real specific. So you, again, this is for you to play and practice. And in practice sessions, it might be fun if you keep revisiting, what do I need to do in my language to help somebody be in a very relaxed, comfortable state versus what do I do when somebody is consciously thinking about something. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's the difference? Okay, is it okay if we go to lunch 3 minutes late? Because what I'd like to do is give you 4 minutes each to play with this, okay? So find a partner. There is no right or wrong. And I will ring the bell after 4 minutes. We're going to discuss this more after lunch. But some of you were having way too much fun with this. And did it help that I told you to go back and forth?
Yes.
And that you could really notice what's happening with somebody else? And inside yourself, you know, you'll just start getting relaxed and then it's all of a sudden they jerk you somewhere else, literally, so that you recognize that your words make a huge difference. And again, I haven't given you a full explanation of how we use this. So that will come after lunch. This was just an initial practice with, wow, I do notice different language, and it's hard to keep coming up with words. Yeah, it is hard to keep coming up with words. And the more you practice it, the easier it will become. Well, we have 1 hour for lunch today, and it's 10 minutes after one. So will you be back at 10 minutes after two so that we can finish this and dive into submodalities? Okay, thank you.